Hello and welcome to another episode of Starside Chat. I am one of your hosts, Aaron, and with me as always is Zach. How's it going, Zach?
Good. We got a new game to talk about, so that's always fun. And we were like so itching to talk about it that we were like, all right, we need to stop talking about this and start recording. Otherwise, we're going to like spoil the entire discussion without recording any of it.
Lots to talk about with that. Also, lots of news stuff to talk about. The game we're talking about is Animal Well, which came out this week, and both of us have dived in. I'm interested to see if we can map out our progress. I'm not exactly sure how to do that in a game like this, but before we do that, we have some pretty interesting news things to talk about.
Yeah, some good news, some bad news. We'll get to all of that, but we kind of missed this since we didn't record last week, but there was a little video that Bethesda released about the update for May for Starfield. So some new stuff coming. Did this get you pretty excited?
It's interesting. The number one thing I think that stands out from this, to me at least, is that there are now finally maps of cities. When the game launched, you could like drop into... It's been forever since I played it. I'm struggling to remember any of the cities.
Well, there were city maps, I think, weren't there? Or maybe there weren't.
No, there weren't. It was just a grid. And like you could see icons on the grid, but it was just that same grid you would get from like dropping down on a barren planet.
Well, that was the thing I was thinking of specifically, was that they actually mapped like the random terrains that are out there as you're exploring sort of the more open spaces. But yeah, definitely a nice little thing that should have been there at the start, but nice to have it now.
Cool to see. It's now the maps are like these cool little isometric things where you can really see the whole city, which is very cool. And they've added a bunch of other little updates as well. No, not really any content, I don't think, just sort of like quality of life stuff.
Yeah, so one of the quality of life things that I liked was like you have basically an options menu now where you can tweak little like gameplay things like increase the amount of credits a vendor might have or your carrying capacity or, you know, ship cargo, stuff like that. So you can kind of tweak the experience a little bit more now. So you can sort of break the fourth wall in that way. You're just like, I need more carry space. Well, let me just dip into these options. Mm. But new like ship interior customization stuff was nice to see.
That is something we should talk about because previously it was very cool to like make your ship, but you were sort of beholden to the habs that you used. Like if a hab looked cool on the outside, you were sort of locked into whatever it was on the inside. But now they have a bunch of empty habs and you have the ability to place items in your ship. Like there wasn't really any customization options in the base game for like interior design, except for like, I guess you could have like a room where you would put weapons on a wall or whatever. But now you can like fully have a ship of empty habs pretty much and like make your own little space, which is very cool.
Yeah. Another thing that should have been there at the start, but nice to see it now. The thing that I liked was they talked about how on console, when this thing, I don't remember if this officially launched. I know there was like a delay between PC and console for this update, but you can now do like a, you know, refresh rate mode basically where it's all about increasing your frame rate instead of having like resolution mode basically, which is another thing that should have been there at the start because I always prefer targeting higher frame rate than resolution, but nice to see that here as well. And then you can respec your traits. So if you remember at the very start of the game, you pick like three random traits or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe you are annoyed or want to try one of the other ones. And so you just go ahead and go in and you can respec them somehow. They're all quality of life improvements, and then they sort of teased like the actual like new content that's coming later. They talked about a DLC that's supposed to be pretty big that's coming, but they also like it was hard for me to tell based on like the video whether they meant the new quests that they were adding were part of that DLC that was coming or if this was like a separate thing that was maybe going to drop before the big DLC update. It was not clear to me because they talked about new quests and then later they were like, also a new big DLC that we're working on. But then they also showed they're working on a ground vehicle for exploration, which is very cool to see. That's one of the big features that everybody has been asking since the game launched. It's like, please add vehicles. And so, yeah, that's finally coming as well. Some of this stuff a little late to the party. I don't know. Will it get you to jump back in? I feel like the quality of life improvement stuff is nice to see, but I probably won't jump back in until that next like big content update drops, and then it'll be like nice to have these other quality of life improvements on top of it.
I agree. I'm waiting for new content to drop. Although, I have a question for you about the video they released, because they released a little dev diary or whatever. What do you prefer? Because for some reason, I didn't like this. There's, I think, two ways to do these things, and Bethesda has been doing this type of way that, for whatever reason, I find annoying. And, like, normally a dev diary would be, like, if, for instance, someone that puts out a ton of dev diaries is Bungie. They'll put out something that's like, hey, this is what's going on with Destiny this year, and this is what's happening, and I'm very excited about this. Bethesda has been doing this thing since Starfield has been in its like press cycle, where they have a fake reporter stop by and like, hey, tell us what you're excited about. And then
who's just like another random Bethesda employee.
Yeah, it's just another random Bethesda person. But she's pretending like, hey, what's going on with this? And I don't know, for whatever reason, I just want them to talk to me and not to a fake reporter.
They don't need to stage it like it's an interview of some sort.
It's so weird.
It's really all they need to do is just have somebody talk to the camera about like the new stuff that's coming.
Because this, I mean, it isn't in our show notes, but Bungie has been releasing more dev stuff about the upcoming, the final shape or whatever. And I've been checking those out and they're like well produced, and I'm not going to check out probably the new Destiny thing, but I enjoy watching those little videos, but I don't know. The other big piece of news this week is they have officially confirmed that the Switch 2 is a thing. They have said that it will be announced this fiscal year, which for them ends in March 2025. So anytime between now and March 2025, they will announce the Switch 2. It won't necessarily come out in this fiscal year. And in addition to that, they said, you know, this is happening, but it's definitely not happening in June. We're going to have a June Direct in like fake E3 time, but we will not be talking about the Switch 2, whatever the Switch successor is. They didn't name it. So don't get your hopes up for the June Direct. It'll be about Switch games and not about hardware. And then additionally, we also got some rumored specs for the Switch 2.
Yeah, a lot of Switch stuff happening this week. They said it will be over 9 years since they announced the existence of the last Switch. So maybe it's going to be like a 10-year anniversary
lifecycle,
type
yeah.
of thing. Yeah, but obviously we've wanted a new Switch or a new Switch hardware for a couple of years now, but that they were able to stretch it out for 10 years... they have basically released everything on it. So
now my memory is that with the Switch, think back to 2016, I believe the Switch was, they released the trailer for it in like October, I want to say. It was out of the blue. We got a Twitter post that was just like Mario pulling back a curtain that was like, hey, don't forget, or like tomorrow we're going to reveal whatever our new console is. And then the following day, they uploaded it to YouTube and we were all amazed. And then it came out the following March, on like March 3rd. So that sort of lines up with them saying it's going to be announced before the end of the fiscal year, if it was maybe going to be released in April. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this timeline, since they're definitely not going to talk about it in June?
Yeah, I think we all thought that it was going to release this year.
Yeah.
But now it's a little bit sounding like they could not even do the announcement until like March of next year. And so the release could not happen until sometime later next year. But yeah, it could still line up the way so that it's sort of a similar timetable for how they did the original Switch, where they were just like, hey, check out this release video, this announcement video that we've made, and that'll happen in like the fall, and then you'll wait until the spring of the following year, and it'll be like, hey, here's the new Switch, and we go to Best Buy and freeze in line until we get it. But that's how it happened for us. I don't know if that's how it happened for everybody else, but I don't know. The anticipation of trying to find out exactly what like all of the new things for the hardware is, because they talked about magnetic Joy-Cons. Like, I just want to know how that works, really.
So the rumored specs that we got are not anything I find to be super interesting. I want to know, like, physical, like, what does it look like? What does it feel like to hold? What is this, like, magnetic thing we've heard so much about? Like, is it... So it will be taken apart. Like, there are going to be Joy-Cons, it seems like. But maybe they won't even call them Joy-Cons, though. But the rumored specs we got are just, like, all technical stuff. Like, 12 gigabytes of RAM, 256 gigabytes of storage, so on and so forth. They're saying that it will be docked. It will be between a PS4 Pro and an Xbox Series S. And handheld, it'll be right above a PS4. So... I mean, that's pretty good. I can't imagine playing GTA 5 on a Switch, but I can play GTA 5 on a PS4, and definitely on a PS4 Pro. So,
yeah.
I mean, GTA 6, depending on... I wonder if it will be... I don't know. Maybe that's too aggressive.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of doubt that it will be on Switch.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe...
I don't know. PS4 Pro, I mean, a ton of stuff... you play Ghost of Tsushima and it looked really good on a PS4 Pro.
Well, I didn't play it on the Pro even. I played it on the base model and it still looked great. So, it's very possible that, you know, some of those games that came out on the PS4 generation, I mean, just you have to kind of put yourself in that headspace and remember what games looked like.
We played the original God of War, the 2016 God of War on PS4.
That's true.
And it looked great.
It's true. So, yeah, I mean, anything up to that quality you could expect on the Switch. But, yeah, I like you, just like reading through a spec sheet for what is this thing is going to be is just kind of my eyes glaze over a little bit. I want to know what it looks like. I want to know what improvements they've made to the Joy-Cons and how they're talking about them being magnetic, how that would work. And I want to know... what it's going to mean for their games and how they're going to improve them.
This is my theory. Because, you know, previously with the Switch, if you wanted to play with the Joy-Cons just in your hands, you had, I don't remember if it came with it or if you had to buy it additionally, but they had that little thing you could slide the Joy-Cons into to make a little controller.
Yeah, the Joy-Con grip. Yeah, Joy-Con that came grip. With the console.
One of the things people have said, like, oh, I wish the Joy-Cons were a little bit bigger for my adult hands. And so I wonder if this one, the Joy-Cons are a little bigger such that when you take them off the Switch, you don't need a grip. You can just click them together and they become a controller. And they magnetize to themselves. What do you think about that?
I a little bit doubt that. One, because Nintendo is like making these for... younger people as well, but also if they're magnetized, you would have the wrong set of magnets on the inside of the Joy-Con to be able to click them together. So you probably would need a Joy-Con grip of some sort to put them in some sort of faux controller style thing, but I am very curious to see how that works out. And like, obviously everybody, the main thing is, did they get rid of the stick drift problem that the OG Joy-Cons had? But yeah, I mean, if this is just like an iterative evolution of the Switch, like I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
That's basically, I think, what everybody wants. They've sort of, like, it was fine in the earlier days of Nintendo consoles or gaming consoles in general to sort of try a little bit to reinvent the wheel each time, but like at this point everybody knows what a game controller looks like and what it needs to be and what your gaming hardware basically needs to be, and I'm okay if they just like, this is how Nintendo does consoles now. Let's just zero in on this and just make improvements every time. It's sort of like, you know, the iPhone is not like radically different every year, true, right? It's the same thing. They just make these little tweaks and improvements each year, basically, such that you don't necessarily need to buy a new iPhone every year. You can wait a few years and then get the next one. And I wonder if that's how we start to see gaming hardware at some point, especially given this generation where a game scaled so well, you almost didn't need to buy a PS5 and an Xbox Series X. And because you can still play a lot of those games on PS4.
I wonder if this one will be compatible with old docks, because I mean the dock is basically just a little USB-C, and then like HDMI, and the newer docks have like Ethernet and power. But
well from this rumored leak, it sounds like the dock is going to do some heavy lifting to make improvements to how the thing looks on TV. So but maybe it'll still be compatible, you just wouldn't get the up-resing or the, you know, some of those hardware improvements that you might get with a new dock. But
so curious. I'm very excited for, I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast, but I watched that Switch reveal trailer so many times that music is burned into my brain. And I'm eagerly anticipating another reveal of a Nintendo console.
Yeah, it'll be very exciting when they finally do release that. And we probably will watch it like hundreds of times, just analyzing every little detail and anticipating the eventual release.
Well, should we pivot to something not exciting?
Yeah, we do need to talk about some more layoffs. Microsoft closed 4 studios. Including some big ones. Arcane Austin, the developer of Redfall, and that Prey game from a few years ago that everybody liked.
Everybody likes Prey. It's on Game Pass. I have thought about picking it up, and I might pick it up after I finish Animal Well. Because I love Arcane. Dishonored was one of my favorite games. I never played Dishonored 2 for whatever reason, but
I mean, Arcane is not gone. This is just Arcane Austin. So they can still make games that Arcane owns. So they presumably you could get Redfall 2. It just would not come from Arcane Austin. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to happen. But like, for example, they could still make another Prey game. It would just have to come from a different Arcane studio. And then Hi-Fi Rush developer Tango Gameworks, I think, was the big one that hit me that closed. That's like very surprising to me, considering that Hi-Fi Rush was so well liked. Like, I didn't like it. We've talked about this on the podcast in the past, and I do think it was like overblown, the reception, because like gaming critics were like wild about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was catnip to them somehow. But I think like a general audience kind of looked at that game and went, what even is this? So it would not surprise me to find out that that game didn't do as well as the critical reception would lead you to believe. But not badly enough that they would need to close the studio over it. And Tango Gameworks, like, they did Ghostwire Tokyo, which I liked a lot, which I don't think probably also did not do super well. But it's a shame that this studio that is talented, very clearly, is now closed down, and you might potentially not ever see sequels to some of the games that they've made.
It's some sort of like tightening of the belt or streamlining that Microsoft is doing. I saw a tweet that was like talking about it was like supposedly a former Microsoft or Xbox person was like telling all or whatever. And their perspective was that previous to the Activision acquisition, Xbox was sort of just a rounding error when it came to Microsoft's, like, all of its, like, businesses. Like, they make the most money out of, like, servers and, like, workstations and, like, you know, software as a service type of stuff. And Microsoft, like, Xbox was, you know, making a little money, but not really anything in relation to, like, the whole of Microsoft. But they spent this, like, $70 billion or whatever to buy Activision. And now the guy, the former like Xbox person's words were like, the Eye of Sauron is now on Xbox because Microsoft is expecting a return on this $70 billion investment. So across the board, they're like, okay, how can we make this $70 billion back, basically? And so that's leading to a lot of like business-minded, let's look at Excel sheets instead of look at talent type of decision-making, which I think is the result of this. I think their reasoning was that none of these studios had games in the works, so they were closing these institutions that weren't actively working on anything, like new IP or whatever, what have you. But we will see more of this as Microsoft like continues to get leaner and more efficient in their eyes, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, when they announced that they were bringing some of their exclusives to PlayStation, it was kind of the same discussion. Like, you look at that giant Activision Blizzard purchase and you're like, well, they got to make that money back somehow if they're ever going to do it. And that means some of their games are not going to be able to be exclusive because they need a wider audience so that they can make more money off of it than they would if they just kept it on their own platform. And so, I think you're right. This is part of that where they're just going to have to tighten the belt some. And that means cutting some studios that you would not like to see cut. The other two were Alpha Dog Studios, which made that Mighty Doom game, which is on mobile, and Roadhouse Games, which supposedly that team is just going to join ZeniMax Online. So they're going to be working on Elder Scrolls Online stuff. So I don't know if that means that the people that worked there are sort of being spared from layoffs, but hopefully they're able to. I haven't heard like numbers on layoffs with this, but I assume that there are some, and that they're cutting 1,900 staff from the video game workforce. So that's still a lot of layoffs. Wild,
yeah.
Especially given that it was only like a few months ago, I feel like, where they had another like previous giant layoff that they announced.
Yeah.
But I was hoping that maybe they were able to like just divert some of their resources and move people to different places, but sounds like a lot of people are being laid off. So that sucks. But yeah, I don't know. Surprising at all that Tango Gameworks was shut down.
The kind of twist of the knife of this is like, I think it was like it was a fairly small game. It wasn't like a huge open world or whatever. And it had accolades. Like it won a BAFTA for like Game of the Year or something. And I think it won something at the Game Awards too, like Best Art Direction or Best Sound or something. And a big Microsoft executive came out the following day and it was like, we need to streamline. We need small games that get accolades. And everybody was just like, well, you just closed a company that did exactly that.
I remember seeing that now that you mentioned it. They were like, yeah, we basically need games exactly like Hi-Fi Rush. Yeah. And like, okay, well, you just closed the studio yesterday. Yeah. So what are you on about?
Not great. I think this team definitely could have done more great stuff had the, you know, parent company allowed them to. But hopefully everybody is able to transition somewhere else and it's not too disruptive to people. But yeah, not a great time to be in game development this year and last year specifically. It seems like every month we're hearing about more giant layoffs, which is not great.
It's such a bizarre thing too, because like I feel like the games industry is like making money hand over fist, like maybe more so than ever, and yet we're at this exact same time it's like so unprofitable for them that somehow they're having to make these drastic cuts. That's just like really crazy.
Well, I think the money is going somewhere, but then they realize like, well, now we don't need to pay people that made it. We can just buy different people with this money. So like the people at the top are making money for sure.
Part of it is what we've talked about in the past about how like this sort of post-COVID era where you had these big like hiring times where, you know, everybody was over hiring and then they had to start letting people go because they couldn't sustain that. And so that was just like bad choices on management. But also now that you're seeing like all these purchases happen where it was like this arms race to like buy up studios. And like we've talked about in the past with some of the purchases, you, in adding their staff to your staff, you have redundancies inevitably. And so some of that is happening, but then, yeah, then you get some kind of smacked across the face with news like this, where it's like, these studios aren't profitable enough to warrant continuing them. And it's just like, well, maybe if you hadn't bought them, maybe they would have survived.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like Redfall was sort of the thing that killed Arcane Austin in a similar way that that Mass Effect Andromeda game killed that other BioWare studio from, where was that? Like BioWare Austin? No. Was that also in Texas?
I don't know.
Am I making that up? Whichever the smaller BioWare studio was that ended up closing after that. But another thing that is sort of related to gaming, but is not like actually within the games industry. I don't know if you ever watched The Gaming Historian.
But, it doesn't ring a bell to me, actually.
He's a guy on YouTube. He's been for years making these like nice little like gaming history related like documentaries. And he like started out, he was pretty young, was making videos like in his bedroom basically. And over time, as like he got more followers, he like ramped up like his production and started making like really nice videos. And recently, I think just this last week, he was like, I'm going to resume like part-time status basically, because I want to, like in the past, he was talking about how he would make a video and release it, and then immediately he would have to be thinking about the next thing. Mm. And he wants to be able to like make videos when he wants to make videos and is like feels driven to do so, and not because it's like required of him.
Yeah.
And so he, because of that, he's like shutting down his Patreon, and he's kind of getting into like some different sort of hobbies as well. And so I feel like this is the only reason I really put this in there, aside from the fact that I followed him for years, and it's sort of sad to see him sort of moving away from making videos. Like, he's not done. He's not gonna never make another like gaming history documentary for his YouTube channel, but he's like definitely moving away from that, or you know, it'll be a longer time in between them. But I feel like we've seen a lot of this with YouTubers. There was a bunch of them that have been doing this, and I wanted to get your thoughts, because it seems like we grew up in a time where like YouTube was new, and you had this whole like content creation thing. And I feel like over the years we've seen everybody either like, you know, 10 years in, like start burning out, or just moving on to different things. And is that sort of, I guess maybe they couldn't do it forever, but I don't know, even just like podcasters and Twitch streamers, maybe it's because I think of this in terms of like Destiny.
Mm.
But like you had a lot of Destiny content creators that have like moved on.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure that they would at least make it through the entire life cycle of, you know, Destiny as a game. But I feel like a lot of them have moved on as well.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, I don't know, maybe content creation is not like a, the solid career that people thought it was. But
yeah, I don't know. I mean, everyone always like people, I've always hear YouTubers complaining about YouTube, because like they change monetization things and stuff gets taken down. I don't know. I think it's still viable if you find your niche. I follow a couple of people that, like, shout out to one that I've been watching recently is a guy called Hardware Haven, who does like mostly tinkering stuff and like NAS related things. He seems to be doing pretty okay, but I think, yeah, just like general like personality type of things, where like I'm just a person playing any game. If you don't have a niche, I could see that being a little less sustainable, but I don't know. It's interesting. Definitely people, I saw a lot of people migrate over to Twitch, I think, because that's more profitable for them on a day-to-day basis. And also, I think it's less like, what am I going to do next? Because you're actively doing it. It's not like, let me plan a video. It's less demanding.
Yeah.
It's just, let me hang out for 6 hours or whatever.
Right.
But it's interesting. Yeah, we are definitely seeing a shift to, like, you know, also short form as well, like YouTube Shorts and Reels and TikTok and whatnot. Those are, I think, where the action's happening right now.
I a little bit wonder how long those will hold out, though, because, like, the short form videos like that are super hot because of TikTok and, like, YouTube Shorts and stuff, and they do, like, get way more views than normal, and they might even bring in some new people, but from what I hear, it's way less profitable to do it that way. So you, like, sort of need to be doing both a little bit, which is maybe contributing to the burnout. But
it's that thing, as society marches on, it gets harder and harder. I mean, we both worked at a television station where, you know, in the beginning when we started, like 10 people were involved in making a, like, and making sure everything's running during a newscast. And then they just, like, kept refining it and being like, well, you also have to learn this and this and this, to the point where now it's like one person doing 10 things instead of 10 people each with their own specialty. And so similarly on YouTube, you sort of just like, well, you have to be a YouTube person, but you also have to know how to manage social media and make, like, reels and also stream on Twitch for all of this to be profitable. You can't be one person now.
Well, and I think it's also a little bit becoming more about, like, you have your hobbyists that aren't going to have, like, a channel that they can do full time. But then you have, like, the people that have become big enough that they have their own staff and they do YouTube as a profession.
Yeah.
And, those people, like, it's hard to get to that space. But even those people are burning out and, like, moving away from YouTube. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting to think about. Like, a lot of the people that we probably started following back when YouTube was first becoming a thing, now it's like, what is it, 10, 20 years after that, and everybody is kind of getting to a point where they have either burnt out because it's hard to do, or they're just, like, finding themselves wanting to find a new career or move on to different things. And so it's crazy to see that initial wave of people that sort of were the first wave of content creators and people talking about games online moving on. I feel like I've seen a lot of them over the last few years, and it's always a little bit of a bummer because you're like, man, now that I think about it, I have followed this person for years. I haven't necessarily, like, paid close attention to their content, like, day in, day out or whatever, but they're just, like, gone now.
Yeah.
There's just, like, not a voice that you follow anymore. So that's interesting. But on a brighter note, in honor of the Fallout TV show, I feel like Amazon Prime subscribers can claim a free PC copy of Fallout 3. I saw this article the other day. This is not a sponsored segment. I think you have to have GOG and you can redeem this.
Okay.
But it's for PC. So if you don't have Fallout 3 or you didn't play Fallout 3 and you were watching, I know, like, the Fallout games got a big boost after the TV show came out.
Yeah.
Definitely worth grabbing a free copy of Fallout 3 and giving that a shot if you've been watching that show. So tell me about Sunset Devils.
I saw this on Twitter. Sunset Devils is on Kickstarter, I think, right now. And it's a very cool, unique design. I wanted to shout it out. It's a little indie game where it's like cowboy aesthetic, but it's sort of top-down isometric, but it's not turn-based. It's real-time. You are some sort of desperado, and you've got myriad weapons, and you're running around. I think there's a 2D version. I think this is a spiritual successor type of thing to that Genesis game back in the day that also had Sunset in the name. I can't remember. But I really liked the design of this. Like, Google Sunset. The Twitter is Sunset_Devils. They've posted a lot of, like, dev videos as they're, like, making the game. But it looks really cool. I love all the little artwork. Like, it's got a really cool aesthetic as far as, like, the guns. You can see yourself reloading the guns in the UI, and you have, like, different holsters and whatnot. But I don't know. What do you think about this? Does this interest you?
I don't know if I like the way this controls. I feel like
it does seem like it has a crazy control scheme because they're playing with a keyboard. But I wonder if it would be better when they add controller support.
Yeah, I was gonna say after this comes out and they're able to work on a console port of this and it just becomes a twin stick shooter, I feel like that would be very fun. But as it is now, it looks like the control scheme would be a little clunky.
It's confusing, yeah, because like on the left, you see your holsters. So you have like Q, E, X, Z, and C can pick your weapons. And then on the right, you see your current weapon, and you have to hold shift to aim, and then you can like pull the hammer back and like fire a gun. I like how intricate it is. I wonder how that would translate to controller. But shout out to this. I'm going to continue to follow the development. I follow the developer on Twitter, so we'll see what comes of it. But I could see this being a big hit because I haven't really seen anything like this before.
Hmm. Well, let's get into the games that are out this week. We're going to talk about Animal Well, but let's talk about Little Kitty Big City. Did you get a chance to play any of this, or have you seen anything?
I haven't. I love the art style of it. Obviously, I love cats. I have two beautiful cats of my own. So I definitely will check this out eventually. It's giving really big, like a short hike type of vibes where you're sort of in a space. I saw one review that said like it takes about an hour to beat if you just mainline, because all you're really looking for is similar to a short hike. What you had to do in that game was collect, I think, feathers to increase your stamina so you could get up to the top of the peak. And this, I think you're eating little fish. And once you eat the four fish you need to find, you have the ability, your stamina increases enough, you can get back up to where you want to be. You in the first part of the game, I think you fall out of a window. You're trying to get back up to that window. But yeah, there's only four fish, and then the rest of it is side quests, and you're earning currencies to have like hats and stuff. But I definitely will check this out. I think this is what I wanted Stray to be. Stray was more like melancholy than I wanted it to be, and also more linear. And I wanted something more just like being a cat and having a fun time. And I think this is exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah, if this is able to, I mean, I a little bit assumed it was going to be Untitled Goose Game, but with a cat instead of a Untitled Cat Game is what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe it is just more a short hike, like, and then maybe a mix of that. But I'm curious to hear your impressions once you get around to playing it. But another thing that I want to try at some point is Hades 2. It's out in early access now. Did this release just this last week?
Yeah, or has this they been dropped out for it because they had the beta. And they were like, everybody check out the beta. And then like a week later, they were just like, it's for everyone now. You can buy it for $30 on Steam and just go crazy. And it's got 2 times the content of the original Hades, even though it's not complete yet. There are a couple placeholder art things and there's no ending, but supposedly it's an insane amount of content right now. I have not picked it up. I think I maybe am going to wait until the 1.0 release, because I think that's probably when it's going to come out on Switch or whatever the sequel to the Switch is, and because I want to play it on my TV as opposed to on my computer. So I'm going to wait for it to come to consoles. But I watched a couple runs with people. I tried to skip over the story parts where they're back in the crossroads, but man, it looks solid. The gameplay looks really cool. There's some new wrinkles to the gameplay. The music is really, really hitting. It just it looks like it's going to be a great game. I'm very curious to see what the timeline is for them getting it to consoles.
Yeah, and the only other one that I could think of that came out this last week was Vampire Survivors Operation Guns DLC, which I don't know. That game is awesome. I got back into it late last year and had a lot of fun with it. I will probably check this out at some point, but I'm not like itching to do so at the moment. So I might wait on it. But yeah, it's what, Contra? They're basically adding Contra stuff to it. So very cool thing. But let's get into Animal Well.
Yes. So tell me about your experience, Zach. I want to know how far you are, and then I'll tell you how far I am.
Well, so firstly, we should say this is like a sort of a puzzle platformer with like Metroidvania elements to it. And it, I really was into not just the art style of it, which is sort of like kind of glowy neon like colors, and sort of a CRT aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But I loved just like, you could feel like you could explore either direction, pretty much any direction, and then you'll like find something that will help you if you ran into like a wall somewhere, and it'll get you going. And I was telling you before we started recording, I eventually got to a place like several hours in where I got stuck and wasn't sure what to do. And I looked up like a video of somebody playing the game and realized that they had gone a completely different direction that I had gone, and found like a bunch of different items that I hadn't found yet. And they were able to immediately get through that section that I was not sure what to do. And so when I was playing it initially, I was like, it seems like it's maybe linear and that I'm just going the obvious direction that you should go. But no, it seems like maybe you can just like explore freely and just like find different stuff. And if you get stuck somewhere, you just go a different direction.
Yeah.
You run into these little telephones that you save the game at. I'm very curious to hear if you found the disc. And did you take it, and were you afraid?
Yeah, so I found the disc, I picked it up, and immediately that big ghost.
You get chased by a giant ghost cat.
So I put it back, and then I was just like, well, maybe I need another item for this. And so I completely didn't do that area for a long time. I just like left that area. I did like the water area and like the ice area and stuff like that. And then eventually I was like, I think I do need this disc. And, you know, lo and behold, if you just go a couple rooms to the left of that, eventually you start to realize like, oh, I can get a fake disc and put that there.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm loving it. I also thought I was going the like intended way. And then I realized like there isn't really an intended way. I'm just going around. How many flames do you have?
Flames?
Oh,
I've seen them on the map, but I don't think I've actually made it to any of them yet.
I have three
because
of
you're
them.
Also collecting eggs, and I have a lot of eggs.
Have you unlocked the room, the egg rooms?
Yeah, I've been in. Well, so there's one in the middle. I don't know if there are other ones, but I've been into that egg room, and I've seen my eggs proudly displayed.
But did you open up the door in there?
No. I don't know how to do that.
Well,
do you have
to get
the flames?
When you get 8 eggs, because like all the doors in that room have a number of eggs on them, and I think the first one is 8 or 10 that'll open up.
I haven't been
you.
Back there in a while.
You should
so
go back. You might have enough to open up the first 2 doors.
But yeah, I have. I got the disc and the little bubble wand that you jump on, and I thought the firecrackers were cool. And yeah, the disc, it's cool. Because you end up finding, like, you'll go into an area, and it's sort of that, like, old school sort of top-down Zelda thing where what am I trying to say? The scene, the screen, basically scrolls once you go into a new area. That can get confusing at times.
Yes, especially when you're right on the edge and you're, like, jumping into it.
Yeah, there's one area in particular where there's like a bunch of bubbles floating up, and you have to jump on the bubbles to platform from one side to the other. But you can also go up, and it was so difficult to like figure out where I was and where I was jumping to be able to navigate going up as the screen was scrolling like that back and forth. So that was a mess a little bit, but I did like that you can like throw the disc. For one, you throw the disc, and if there's like a dog there that wants to come attack you, if you throw him the disc, he'll just like grab it and be distracted for a little while, and you can like safely pass by. But also, you can throw the disc, and it'll like bounce, sort of ping back and forth between like objects that it's hitting. And if you jump on top of it, you can like ride it a long ways. And so there are some areas that are like somewhat hidden, and like there was one, I want to say in like sort of the upper left hand corner of the map that I went to last night, where I just like was like, this seems like a lot of water. I don't know how to get over there. And then I was like, oh yeah, let me just toss my disc at the thing behind me. And it bounced off, and I jumped on it, and I rode all the way over there. I was like, oh, hey, I was rewarded with a little chest that probably had an egg of some sort that I don't remember what it was. But yeah, it's just like a lot of cool stuff like that. And you find these little, you can sort of find hidden areas as well.
Lots of hidden areas.
So yeah, very cool. I feel like I'm going to get to the end and be like, oh yeah, I was super thorough on this, and then realize that I'm like 28% done with the game. I feel like it's one of those games where I will realize only once I'm done how much I missed as I was going through it. But yeah, where are you exactly?
I've got three of the four flames, and they're all pretty straightforward to get, except for one of them. I was like, I don't understand what I'm doing, and I got kind of lost. And so I did look up a guide for how to get that flame, and it was pretty obvious once I realized what I had to do, but it was a real, man, it was not fun to do. That was the one part of the game where I was like, I'm not having a good time. And I'm interested to see when you get to that part. But there's a series of jumps you have to do that are infuriating, or at least the last jump is infuriating. But now I am kind of stuck, actually. And if the game is so new, I can't look up a guide for what I need to do. It's probably something very obvious that I'm not getting, but I think I need a different item that I don't have. And so maybe I just need to get more eggs and unlock another egg door, or I'm not sure what the problem is, but there's a room you get to where you have to stand on two different buttons in order to unlock something. And there's a bunny right behind, or no, I'm sorry, a squirrel right behind the thing that you have to get to. I can get on both sides of that door, but I can't get on them at the same time. And I think I need some sort of item that will allow me to hit two buttons at the same time. And I think that's...
I think I know... So I went to an area where there was like this little platform thing, and there were two buttons on either side on the inside, and there were two of those squirrel guys in the middle. And so... Actually, not in the middle. They were like inside the platform.
Okay.
And you could drop down onto a platform right in between them. And they would walk to you because they wanted to get you, I guess.
Oh, those little chinchillas?
I think they were squirrels, but yeah, maybe. But if you throw down a firecracker, they run away from it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So they moved away and stained it on the buttons that I needed them to stand on.
I did that room. A lot of really interesting little puzzles that like really... You get these weird items, and you're like, I wonder if this is only good for one thing. And you realize, like, oh, like the yo-yo. Did you get the yo-yo yet?
No.
The yo-yo is great for a lot of things, but it. Well, I guess I won't spoil it, but it's good for a lot of things. It's not just good for being a yo-yo. Similarly, like the bubble flute or the bubble pipe or whatever you call it. What do they call it? They call it like the bee pipe or something.
Oh, the bee wand?
The bee wand, yeah. That is good for climbing on its own bubbles, but also has other secret functions, which are cool to find.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Where you encounter those things that, I don't know how you would describe them. They look like a frog's head on a pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have an interesting interaction with those, we can say.
But yeah, here's my big question to you is, did you turn off the scan lines?
Oh, I did at one point, and then I was like, no, I'm good with leaving them on, and I turned them back on again.
I turned them off, and I haven't looked back.
Oh, really?
Distracting? They were a little distracting to me. There was a part where I was in a place with a bunch of vines, and for some reason, it was like, I could tell what I was doing, but there was also something in the way of me. When I turned off the scan lines, I was a lot more able to see where I was landing.
Mm.
And so I just left them off.
Yeah. I didn't love the aesthetic, but I didn't hate it. It does make everything a little fuzzy. So maybe it would be better to have them turned off. But
I like the aesthetic a lot. I just, it's not as legible to me as having them not there.
Yeah. It's kind of like when I played, A Short Hike, you have the ability to like make it less polygonal.
Yeah.
And I just turn basically the resolution all the way up so that it looked like a normal game instead of being so polygonal. But yeah, I'm liking it so far. I'm realizing as far as I made it in, I was like, thought I was doing a really good job of exploring. And I realized that there are so many other places I need to explore before I'm going the way I was trying to go that I need to backtrack a little bit. And I do wish there was like a way to fast travel from save points.
I think that will become unlocked. There's so many things that I was like, there's no way this is going to work. And then it did work. I feel like the dev has just like put a lot of quality of life things in here, but you have to work to get them and unlock them. And I would say go back to that egg room because you'll get some good stuff from there. This is a game where I normally don't try to get like 100%, but I might try to 100% this game. It gives me like kind of Hollow Knight vibes where I just want to continue exploring. And like in Hollow Knight, I got all the grubs, which normally I wouldn't do in a game. But with this, I think I'm going to try to get all the eggs.
It is worth acknowledging that I have had a really fun time just exploring and seeing what I can find. And also, like, when you happen upon, like, an area where you're like, I don't know if I can explore this or go somewhere here or if I can interact with this area right now. If you try some stuff out, you almost always find there is a way to do it. I don't know if it's the way they intended, but it is possible still to explore that area. Like sometimes I'll, you know, pull out the bubble wand and, you know, conjure a bubble, wait for it to float up a little bit, jump on top of it, and then throw the disc and then jump on the disc. And like you can make it to different places such that I think this will eventually be like a really crazy one to watch speedrunners
do. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
It's like you can tell that they designed this stuff very smartly and specifically because it feels like there's often more than one way to do things.
Yeah.
And that's always, it always is a good feeling when you figure it out.
We should also say this is solo dev and it was made over the course of 7 years.
Yeah. And crazy. I think it's only like 30 megabytes or like, it's like an insanely file size for a game. Like it's very, very small. It took like 2 seconds to download.
Yeah. That was true for me as well. I bought it on Switch and then was playing it like 5 minutes later.
I'm playing it on PS5 and I did the thing through the app and I was like, yeah, go ahead and install the console. And like a second later, the notification popped up. I was like, it's ready to play. I was like, oh man, that was fast.
It's so good. Every like weird little animal you come across, I just love to look at. Like there's a duck in the main area that as far as I can tell does nothing. You just like, it'll quack sometimes. There are these like cool birds you see every once in a while. Just like everything aesthetically is just really hitting for me. And I can't wait to get past this barrier I'm in and continue to explore.
Yeah, and I found there was this one area where there were these two big birds like perched up sort of towards the top of the room. Mm-hmm. And I could run around freely and they wouldn't mess with me, but I took the chance of throwing my disc at one of them and the thing like chased me around and pecked my head and like would grab me and throw me around and I eventually died. But it was very interesting just to see, you can have these different little interactions with the animals that you happen upon. And some of them will destroy you. But yeah.
I'll say this right now. Right now, I think Animal World might be my game of the year.
Oh, really? You're that high on it?
I'm pretty high on it, I have to say. I really like it. Nothing this year has like grabbed me like this, where I just like can't wait to get back in and play it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it, but I almost... I don't want to say had the opposite feel, because I am liking it a lot more than maybe this will make it sound like, but I was like playing it, and when I stopped, I was like, will I make it to the end of this game? I don't know, but I want to play more of it. But I also am like, it's been long enough that I've put off playing more Final Fantasy, and maybe I need to get back to that. But I have been enjoying this game a lot. And but you're right, it is one of those things where you get stuck. It's like hard to look up a guide at this point.
It's so new, yeah. That's going to be a problem, I think, with Silksong when it comes out.
Yeah. Well, so it's funny because the video I referenced earlier, I just was like Animal Well walkthrough. And there was just this like 5-hour unbroken video of somebody playing the game. I don't even know if he finished it in that but you could just like scrub forward until you saw something that looked like what you were experiencing.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, this is what he did. But he did something I couldn't do because I didn't have that item. And so I realized, okay, no, I need to actually explore more before I try to do anything here. So that's been the only time I looked up a guide, and it just told me that I am not ready for that room yet.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, on that note, like, good that it's, you know, one of those games that will be tricky, but you can always work it out eventually if you just try some stuff. So
an A plus from me. I guess I'll reserve judgment until I finish it completely. We'll probably by next week I will have beaten it, but we'll talk a little bit more about it once we have both beaten it probably.
Yeah, I'm gonna try playing more of it this weekend and as we're recording this, and yeah, we can talk about it more next week. The other thing that I wanted to shout out that we were watching, I sent this to you, but Wes Anderson apparently made a Mont Blanc fountain pen, and he made a commercial for it. I thought it was a funny, weird little thing.
A delight. I loved to watch it.
Yeah, I love when Wes Anderson makes commercials. I love Wes Anderson as a director to begin with, but like just to have like, you know, a 4 or 5 minute long, like Wes Anderson style thing that you don't have to sit there for 2 hours on is great. Also, I've been like getting into fountain pens recently. So it was like a weird convergence to like have not just fountain pens, but also like one of my favorite directors, like who made a fountain pen that I will never own, by the way, because it's like $2,500 and it's like they only are making like a limited number of them, which is why it's so expensive. But yeah, it was a weird little moment of convergence to be like, oh, hey, what is going on here? Like, I like fountain pens and now Wes Anderson is like making one. So. anything else you've been sort of playing, watching this last week?
You know, I watched Ponyo.
Oh, really? First time, huh?
Never seen it, and I loved it. It was a delight. I loved every second of it. It was beautiful.
Great music in that.
Great music. Great. Just the whole vibe of it is great. It's a movie where there's never really a second act bad thing that happens, which I enjoyed. Yeah. Like usually, there's like the ramp up. Everything is fun, and then somewhere in the middle, you'll get the like, well, now the characters hate each other for some reason for a little bit. Or like, oh no, one of them has fallen.
A bummer.
Yeah. But this is like just a delight all the way through. Nothing bad ever happens, which is exactly the kind of movie I like.
Yeah, I like that movie a lot too. It's been years since I've seen it, but one of the better Miyazaki movies, I think. And probably one of the better soundtracks by, what's his name? Joe Hisaishi.
We're getting close to The Boy and the Heron being released on digital, and I'm very excited to watch that.
Man, you know, speaking of things coming out on digital, I'm still waiting on Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, really? That hasn't released yet?
Not that I'm aware of. Maybe it did in the last week, and I just haven't checked, but I keep waiting on that to come out.
I am excited to hear your review of that.
I want to watch it. The only thing I've been watching this last week has been season 3 of Clarkson's Farm dropped on Amazon, and so I've been watching that. They did a weird thing where they're like, here's the first 4 episodes, and then like a few days later they were like, here's the, or maybe it was like a week later they were like, here's the next 4. But yeah, I enjoy that show. I don't know why, but I find it entertaining to watch. Even though it's gross at times because, you know, it's farm stuff, but
yeah.
But yeah, that's out there. And I just realized as I was scanning Amazon looking for Clarkson's Farm the other day, they added the 2004 Battlestar Galactica series.
Oh, really?
Like it wasn't on there before because I wanted to watch it like a couple of weeks ago. And so I was going to start watching it and it wasn't on there. And so I was like, well, I guess I don't have an option. And now, suddenly, a couple weeks later, here it is. So I might start watching that here soon.
Here's something else. This isn't in our show notes or anything, but I was just like randomly looking around at stuff this week, And I read the Wikipedia article for the book Neuromancer, which I read in high school and loved. Did you ever read Neuromancer?
I think so. It's been, if I did, it's been a really long time.
A classic, an icon, maybe the first cyberpunk book, as they call it. A wonderful book. William Gibson, a genius. I don't know about him in current times. I don't know if he's become insane or not. But I love Neuromancer. Famously, it's been they've been trying to make a movie out of Neuromancer forever, and it's just been in development hell. And I think there was like Will Smith was attached at one point back in the 90s or something. But they are moving forward.
He was attached to The Matrix as well.
It's true. Yeah,
they're like, no, we're going with Keanu Reeves.
Apple TV Plus or whatever it's called is making a Neuromancer, I think, TV show. Which I'm very interested in because I love that book. And I wonder, I think Apple TV Plus has had a pretty good track record with, like, I think people like that Foundation series a lot. They have pretty good sci-fi chops as well. They made that Silo series, which people say is pretty good. So I might check out this Neuromancer. I don't know when it's coming out, but supposedly it's they have a main character for it, and the contracts are signed. So Neuromancer might finally become something, a TV show or a movie. So get ready for that.
Yeah, and didn't we talk like a long time ago about how Amazon like bought the rights to Snow Crash and then they just never did anything with it?
Snow Crash and Ringworld. They have the rights to both of those properties.
Oh, that's right. Ringworld as well. Yeah, that's crazy to me.
It is crazy. They're just sitting on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they probably have a lot of stuff that they've bought up and they're like, eventually we're going to do this. But right now,
I think they could probably pull the plug on that Lord of the Rings series that people were nonplussed on.
Yeah, they don't need to spend the most money ever spent on a TV show on this show that nobody seems to care about.
Did you see that they're making that new Lord of the Rings movie?
Oh, yeah. Isn't there like a Gollum movie that they're making?
Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum.
It's just like, it's like that Gollum game that came out like last year or the year before, where it was like, who wants this? Why are you making this?
I think it was that that Jacob Geller guy who's on MinMax sometimes. He tweeted, like, I am the executive that decided we need a movie about Gollum. I make $35 million a year, and everyone says I'm doing a great job. It's just wild.
I wish I could be that guy. I got some stuff for you to green light.
I can't imagine how this, like, are they going to do what the Gollum game did, where, like, Gollum's a great idea because we can revisit old things from his perspective. Like, nobody wants that. Like,
he's not wild to me. He's not a character that you make the main character.
And, like, spoiler alert for Lord of the Rings, he straight up dies in Return of the King. There's no way he can be revived. He goes into lava. There's no reviving him, I don't think. So
yeah, like, what part of his story is going to be worth telling that hasn't already been told? Like, he gets consumed by the ring and becomes an evil little goblin. I mean, why do I need to hear the story from his perspective?
Well, I wonder if it'll be in the past when he's a hobbit or whatever, and it's like his slow transition. It's a terrible Star Wars prequels thing where we see Darth Vader become Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah. He's like a sweet little boy. Yeah. And he becomes like an evil goblin known as Gollum.
Awful. I would hate to see it. I would refuse to see it.
Yeah. Like, what's the point? I feel like they're so desperate for existing franchises, even though there's not more material to do with them. They're like, well, we'll think of something. Just like make something in there. And they're like, a Gollum movie. I can think of so many more interesting characters in the Lord of the Rings universe to make a movie about. And they just are like, everybody wants to see Gollum.
Gollum, you gotta have Gollum.
His story. Yeah. There's so many other characters they could pick, but Gollum's the one. Well, on that horrible note, go ahead and follow us. Oh, wait. Do you have any parting wisdom?
My parting wisdom this week is to play Animal Well. I think it's very enjoyable, and it's a great game.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Well, on that more positive note, let's go ahead and follow us on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. I almost said Starside Cafe. Follow us in those places at Starside Cafe, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.